look in your eyes and I can see that love's so dangerous.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789 in Texas, that same number. It's Tuesday, but Sandy Williams is in the studio. We're glad he's here. Cassandra, thank you very much for waiting. Happy New Year to you. And what can we do for you, my friend?
Hi, Earl. Thanks for taking my call. And Happy New Year to you, Earl, and Sandy, and your family, and to all of the listeners on the air. I just wanted to make a really quick point as to what I believe is going on with both the Republican and the Democratic Party. Right now, both parties have very extreme elements in their parties, and it's making it very difficult to attract, oftentimes, independents permanently or crossovers from the other side. I typically vote Democratic. However, I have not been pleased with the Democratic Party. And recently, when the state party called and asked me to volunteer, I told them that I was no longer part of the Democratic Party. I have become independent, and please do not call me anymore. I told them that if and when I can, I will vote for their candidate, but I was very displeased with the Democratic Party on both the state and the federal level. And there are lots of people who
do
feel
mind,
that way
do you
about.
Mind, do you mind if I ask you what were the things about the Democratic Party on the state level that you know you disagree with?
Oh, wow. Okay, one has a lot to do with the budget of the Democratic of the state party. You know, I understand that Governor Evers, you know, he does not have a lot of flexibility because of what the
Republican Party. Right.
Of what they've done. But he could have used the bully pulpit and really forced the issue in front of the public to help them understand what is going on. He is not the most interesting speaker, and I really hate for it to come down to charisma, but we have to put people in office who can communicate to voters and make them understand the issue.
So he's not eloquent. We know he's not eloquent. He'll tell you that himself.
What are the issues? Cassandra, you said, though, that you wished that he had used his bully pulpit to push forward some particular issues. What are those? This is not a loaded question. I'm just curious.
Well, you know what? One thing that he did that really annoyed me was how the COVID money was spent. COVID money was spent to help homeowners. They were given payments to stay in their homes, and I will have to tell you that I am a homeowner, and I scrimped and saved and I struggled to pay my mortgage. And it really annoyed me that there were homeowners who received a tax benefit or a subsidy to stay in their home. Now, that just really
many businesses receive the same, right?
I know, and I did not like that as well. And that's something that I fought both the Republicans and the Democrats. The PPP, it was just a mess.
Well, the federal government put it out there. It wasn't I mean, the federal government sent those dollars to the states. The states had to use the dollars, right? I mean, that came from the federal government.
There should not have been a PPP loan, and I'll tell you why. If you do a little research, and our federal elected officials have this information, many of the businesses that we have today, they are what's known as zombie businesses. In other words, the only way they can survive is by debt, not by earning profits. They are surviving by getting out loans. If you need a loan in order to keep your business afloat, then your business should go out of, then you should go out of business. Why should I, as a taxpayer, have to subsidize your business if you don't make the right decisions in terms of hiring the right people, if you are not economical in terms of your purchases?
Do you feel that way about the military budget?
Of course. Of course. There are lots of legacy programs in the military. There are lots of equipment that the Army, that the Pentagon continues to purchase, and they no longer need it. But it's all attached to jobs. So, absolutely, I believe that we can cut our military budget and only purchase weapons that are truly needed by our troops or to protect our country. There's lots of fat in the military. So yes, I am, you know, I guess the older I get, I am really concerned about the way our tax dollars are going. And one other thing, and I know, Earl, this is going to bother you. I agree with an extended child tax credit. However, I do feel that there should have been a cap on it per family, perhaps maybe 2 to 3 children at the most. But there are people who had 5 and 6 kids, and they were receiving the full tax benefit. I just felt that that was too excessive. I am pleased that the Republican Party turned that down. Yes, to an extended tax credit, it should be means tested, and there also should be a cap on the amount of money that a household can receive.
Cassandra, let me just jump in here a little bit. If you look at this from the children's perspective, if what you're interested in doing is making sure that the next generation of people born has all the opportunity possible, if you're the fourth child born into a family, you didn't choose to be born into a family, you didn't choose to be born fourth, and you are, however, are the one who are going to be penalized by the policy that you just described. So, you know, to me, the notion that they shouldn't get it is a recrimination aimed at the parent who has decided, whether it's wisely or not, or maybe even not decided, but has had a fourth child or a fifth child. But if we look at it from the perspective of the children born, one of the biggest problems we have in society are a large number of children who are born into situations where they have little or no opportunity. And I think my view is that if society really has a community view of ourselves and we really have a family value, that we would put as much value on the fourth child or the sixth child, whatever we think of the judgment of the parents who had those children, we would want to make sure that that generation of children all have equal opportunities and they didn't choose to be either born into that family or to be born fourth, fifth, or ninth.
And,
you know what, Sandy? I happen to disagree here. You know, a family will do what they can to make sure that every member of their family succeeds. They do not need to have a benefit for every single child in order for all children to rise. But here is also something that the Democratic Party just refuses to talk about, and that is the obligation of the parents. I am an educator, and I cannot tell you how many times I have students walk into my classroom, and they are unprepared because their parents did not take the necessary steps to prepare them. And the message has to go out. And I mean, we really have to talk candidly to parents. And that is, the educational system cannot do everything. The parents have to take responsibility for educating their child or making sure that they are advocating for their child to get what.
So Cassandra, what if children don't get to pick their families? And so if there are generational issues there, how then can we expect parents who don't have the capacity? Let's be clear. It is not easy being a parent. It's doubly hard being a single parent who struggles, who didn't succeed as far as education is concerned, and now we're expecting somehow for those same parents to be able to understand and to educate their children to the degree that once they come into schools, they're going to be able to understand and prosper and thrive in that environment. They need support. They need help.
Well, and let me just pile on here a little bit, but, you know, I'm not going to make a value judgment about the families that have allowed or have in which this happens, but there is an increasing number of teenage mothers who are giving birth to children for whom there is no family, right? There's a single mother who's really too young to have known anything about or to be a capable mother, and yet this child is born into that circumstance. And it's those children that we need to make sure have all the opportunities. So, you know, my view of child daycare is I favor much more that universal child daycare be a delivered service the same way that grade school is, and that if you have children and you live someplace, there is a daycare center where you can take your child and they will be cared for and they will receive preschool education. They'll get off on the right foot. We have way too many children in this country not being given the opportunities to get off on the right foot, and we have people who want to tell them that their family ought to pull them up by their boots.
At 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. You know, Cassandra, I always enjoy your conversations because,
you
know, they're always in depth and they're always from an educated perspective of things. But you wanted to respond. Go ahead to what Sandy said.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to Sandy that I am not proposing that we cut children off and more or less leave them to fend for themselves. However, there needs to be some balance restored to the system. We have had a generation, one in which we have provided social benefits to families and to children. And in my estimation, the tax money that has been spent, you know, trying to save children, we are not reaping a lot of rewards from it. And I can tell you as an educator, my students, they are coming in and they are just unprepared. And oftentimes, sadly, they just will not live up to their God-given talent in this world because they just did not receive the the skills in the educational system early in life.
Let me ask you.
I just want to make one other point. And the other point that I want to make, as I said, I'm not proposing that we just cut people off, but there is time for some honesty about what the responsibility should be on the parent. And it is true that there are some young women who are having children, and they may not be prepared to parent. However, they may have a mother, a father, an aunt, someone else in their family who they can lean on and work with in order to help them parent that young child. There needs to need to be a renewed focus on the family. We have to strengthen the family.
So, Cassandra, you are aware that the young girls having babies are a whole lot less than they were in the 70s and the 80s, right? Out of wedlock.
What do you mean by a whole lot less?
Well, if you look at the pregnancy ratings or numbers in our community, they're down significantly from when they were in the heights of the 1970s and 80s because of birth control.
This is true.
Yeah. So we have less single young mothers than we did during those welfare years when you could have a baby and receive a lot of financial support and have a second one and get the same and the third one, and there was incentive to have all those children. They took all that away when they, under Bill Clinton, they did away with welfare reform. I came in with welfare reform. What Sandy and I are saying is, in the end, it doesn't benefit any of us to leave those families out in the lurch. And long term, what happens to those children if we as a society don't step in and do something to make sure, do the best to the best of our ability that they become productive?
Wait just a minute, Cassandra. I think that there might be more agreement here than we think. I too agree that putting money in the hands of families who have demonstrated that they won't responsibly necessarily spend that money doesn't necessarily get the child the daycare that they need. But most of the developed countries in the world have daycare centers. They have provided, from a public standpoint, the same kind of daycare service that is provided to school-age children, and the same is true with preschool training, so that children in this world, in this country, it seems, should be afforded the opportunity, but through the actual provision of the service of child daycare, institutional child daycare, as well as institutionalized preschool training, so that where the family isn't providing it, maybe because they weren't provided it, they don't have the example, they don't have the role model that to have followed to do it, so we can get out of this generational decline and intergenerational decline by providing some services. And so that's, I guess that's not akin to solving the problem of the family, which is a much harder problem to solve. But if we can solve the generational problem that you identify as an educator of having children who come into the educational system who aren't prepared to be educated based on their prior experience, we might be able to improve on that and therefore improve on the outcomes.
20 years ago in this country, we had preschool training. A lot more than we have right now. 20 years ago, that was the case. The government even kind of supported that. Somewhere along the line, Cassandra, the government pulled out of that kind of work.
You know, and Earl, you're absolutely right. And that is the information that we must share with young parents, and that is, that it is their responsibility to make sure that their child comes into the school system ready to learn, because the government no longer offers those programs. And that responsibility has now been pushed on the parent. And here's
Cassandra,
what happens.
Hang on 1 second, Cassandra. Hang on.
Okay.
We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy Williams is in the studio. We also have Cassandra, so it's her show too today. And thank you for hanging on, Cassandra. You know, you don't realize the value that your dialogue and your conversation has to our program and to this radio station. But where were we at, Sandy? Were you?
Well, I know, Cassandra, I think the conversation reflects two different perspectives. And I know as an educator how frustrating it must be to have a classroom filled with children who clearly are not receiving the guidance at home that would allow them to be instructable in your school. And they come doomed to failure because of and probably creating an environment in which it's hard to succeed for any of the other children, you know. So it must be very frustrating as an educator to face that circumstance, and I can understand how so many people want to focus on the family and the experience they had, which was to have a family or two, but I have trouble as a human being looking at a child who's born into some unwanted circumstance, either unwanted by them or unwanted by society, and feeling like we need to let that child bear the burden and to suffer the consequence of not having the family around them that could solve their problems for them, because we understand they're helpless. And so, you know, we talked about how it was that the government was no longer providing daycare and preschool education like it used to. Your answer was, well, then that we have to tell the families that they need to step back in and do it. Well, sure, we should tell the families that, but there still will be a substantial number of children in environments where that won't occur on their behalf. And so my question is, why are we not urging the government to step back into making sure we have no problem, and you obviously have no problem with public education from the primary and secondary levels, that ought to occur, and that's a proper government function. And I'm surprised that we don't have concurrence that it would be a proper government function to provide preschool care as well. It's really a predicate to education. It's really the beginning of childhood education. And I'm surprised that we as a country have stepped back from, particularly in an environment where now today, both parents, if we have a nuclear household, both parents are breadwinners in almost every circumstance. And in the many circumstances where we don't have a nuclear household, we have a single breadwinner. We also have increasingly small number of adults who are able to be retired and at home. So you mentioned grandparents and aunts, but increasingly grandparents are working, and aunts and uncles need to work as well. So it's very hard to find, even in a broad family environment, a structure in which we have daycare for children. And so I guess My thinking is not altogether different than yours, Cassandra, only that I think that, that the government ought to return to providing, and by the government, I mean state and local government, maybe some federal funds to support it, but that we ought to be providing the structure to children.
Sandy, we are not that far apart, believe it or not. The problem is our state and federal government, they do not wish to provide the funding and the services for it.
Well, the wish, wish is an extension of the voter. So what I'm suggesting is that politically speaking, we ought to be pushing our politicians in the direction of making sure that our next generation has every opportunity to enter the economy and to enter their lives in with all of the opportunities possible to make them very successful as their potential allows. And so, you know, to me, it's not an answer that our governments don't want to do it. Our governments are an extension of us. And so maybe we ought to be all asking our governments to do it. In whatever political flavor we might have, we ought to be leaning on our government to at least do the right thing for the next generation.
So Cassandra, I'm from a family of 13, and and my mother could stay home and rear the 13 because my dad had a job that provided, you know, enough money that my mother could stay home and raise 13 children and make sure that we knew how to read and write and knew alphabets and how to count before we went into school, preschool, into school. That's not the case anymore, right? That's not the case. And so single mothers have to work. They're not home to rear the kids early on. They've got their child, and they've got to go to work and keep a roof over their heads. And so it's a different time. I think it's what Sandy and I are saying, and because it's a different time, we have a government that certainly has the resources to be able to make that happen. If we can spend $858 billion a year on the military, we certainly can spend $12 billion or $20 billion to make sure that the future of our society gets a fair shake.
You know, Sandy and Earl, I am not that distant from you in terms of what you all believe, but while we're waiting for the government to do the right thing, we have children who are falling through the cracks. And so while we are pushing our government leaders to provide this funding, we still have a need right now. And because of that, all I'm saying is I'm taking a very pragmatic, realistic approach to this problem. One, we have to communicate honestly to the parents and tell them, we no longer have the services that you grew up with when you were a child. Therefore, mom and dad, you're going to have to take on this new role.
But mom and dad are... they're not in a position to do it as my mom and
well,
people of her generation.
Cassandra, you know, I've talked about this on a number of shows, but you look at the median income family in Wisconsin, $64,000 a year, round numbers. Both parents are breadwinners. You look at the budget they have; they can't afford daycare in a private basis. And if they give up one breadwinner, they end up being a $32,000 or $34,000 in income family, and they can barely survive. So it's just there's a rock and a hard spot here. But I don't disagree with you. But I'm wondering, what is the medium that solves this problem sociologically to the extent that and I think everyone agrees that we ought to do all we can to boost the family structure and to make the family structure as capable as possible of delivering what they need to deliver to their children. But we have religions, we have social media, we have politicians. You know, I'm struggling to figure out how it is that you want to deliver this message to the parents while we try and lean on, and I presume you're saying you would also agree that we ought to be leaning on our government to return to providing those kind of services governmentally. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly what I stated before. What I guess the to just sum it up, the message that I would send to parents, and I know many of them, they are struggling economically, but one thing they just have to understand in terms of our new learning environment is that they are going to we have to call upon them to do more. They cannot expect the government or our educational institutions to do the work. This would be a topic for another day, but we are losing highly skilled educational professionals in our field right now. Many of them are deciding to leave the field, not because they want to retire, but because they're just burnt out for numerous reasons. And so we have younger teachers, younger educators coming into the classroom. We are losing a lot of experienced teachers. So, and all I'm saying to those young families out there, that you are going to have to take a more proactive role in your child's education, and you're going to have to figure out a way to do it. I know it's hard, but that is what you will have to do.
Cassandra, in that other show talking about educators, I think we should also talk about the extent to which they're being put under a great deal of political pressure, the defunding public schools, all of the attack on public school education is like robbing the public schools of a great deal of talent, and it's a huge distraction from the actual job of educating students. So anyway, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, Cassandra, as always. Thank you for taking the time out. Really appreciate it. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to both of you.
All right.
Bye now.
You know, Sandy, there's just many different things that Cassandra said, and at the root of all of it is our government can't afford to do it. It's not that we can't afford to do it. You know, I mean, we're saying and putting pressure on these mothers to do something they can't do. If they could, I've seen so many kids that if the mother had the wherewithal and knew, how to make that happen, she would. I don't think there's one mother who doesn't want to see her child get the best possible education that they possibly can. But if she doesn't know how to do that, that's not an easy undertaking, Sandy.
Well,
with mom and dad in the home, it's...
Well, in fact, though, this conversation with Cassandra is exactly what we need, because we have agreement there that we want our children to have the best possible opportunities. But then we have to discuss, first, what is the problem, and then, secondly, what are the solutions to the problem? If we have that discussion, and we had that on a national basis, we'd be headed seriously in the right direction, because we'd all at least be intent on solving the problem. And I think we would all come to the realization, ultimately, that we need to have government-provided daycare and government-provided preschool education. It would be through local school districts. It would be not the federal government providing some service distant from parents. No, it would be a locally provided service. But we need to have the discussion, and then we need to look at the facts and really understand the facts. And, of course, everyone has their own vantage point, which colors their thinking. A teacher feels a great deal of frustration and anger, really, at the situation that creates the children that they are trying to educate so desperately.
So listen to this. So, what's the name of that? Oh, Sesame Street, right?
Yeah.
Sesame Street was not around for you and I, but Sesame Street was around for my children. And their generations, and they learned so much from Sesame Street. Do you know, in order to get Sesame Street today, you've got to have cable. It's not on regular television anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a parent can't afford the cable channel, then her child doesn't get access to what was a valuable tool in Sesame Street, right? And... And then there's so many different things that have transpired. The fact that they no longer teach phonics. Somebody made a decision to change the way they were educating and teaching children. That didn't work. They went to something called whole language that changed the way kids learn. And so now they're talking about going back to phonics because they realized 30 years ago they made a mistake. But people, children got out. They weren't, and they didn't learn the same way. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is, as you know, it's Tuesday, and we've had him here the entire show. And yeah, and I just want to thank Cassandra, and you know, Sandy, it's to the benefit of the society, as you stated, to everybody, that you educate people, and if people can't figure it out, then, you know, again, I'm talking about a time when I know that there was preschool, even in the public schools, they used to have preschool. And you could bring the three-year-olds into the schools. The government paid for that. Somewhere along the way, they cut that back and said, we can't afford that anymore. And so part of this is a fallout of that preschool. If the parent doesn't know how to educate, for instance, even though I had 12 siblings,
mm-hmm.
all of us, by the time we got to grade school, could count. We knew our alphabets.
Up to 13, at least.
We knew our alphabets, right? Mom made that happen because she could stay home, right? You know, if a young lady who has a child, young woman who has a child, in the early stages of the child's life, at the time that she can do those things, if she can stay home, that's the way it's always been. But if she can't stay home in those early stages of the child's life, and we're not talking about, what is it now, if they have a baby, and I don't know how long they can stay with the child before they got to go back to work. What is it? Not even 6 months. I'm pretty sure it's not 6 months. The business isn't going to wait for the mom for 6 months.
No, I think 2 or 3 months is a normal maternity leave kind of thing.
Two or 3 months. Well, you know, in the interim, now you got to leave that child, you know, with somebody else.
The thing that surprises me is that the government has dropped providing these services and hasn't extended the service even to younger children, in spite of the fact that there have been all these broad psychological studies now and sociological educational studies that demonstrate that children who have had preschool education do much better throughout their entire career. They do better through their grade school and high school, on to college. Every way you can measure suggests that preschool education is an important ingredient to long-term success.
You know, Sandy, I would venture to say that if you look at the Asian community,
mm-hmm.
and see if they're offering that, right? Preschool. I'll bet you they are.
Oh, you mean in different countries?
Yes.
Well, I think so. I'm confident that there is child daycare and preschool provided in almost every one of the developed countries. And that it's not a tax credit, it's rather a service that's provided where you take your children and they can receive this care. I mean, I know that back in the day when we all had stay-at-home parents, that people used to point over at the Soviet Union and say, look, that's what'll happen if you'll end up with both parents working and you'll have to have daycare and it'll be a government inculcate everyone with the system. But the fact is that we have become a society in which there are double breadwinners in almost every family.
You know, Sandy, where this is going to change, if ever this is going to change, this conversation has to be done on a national scale, on a national level. And I just don't think it even reaches the level of having the dialogue on a national level.
Well, it's because we can't seem to get to that conversation. We get stuck on who can use what bathroom, and we get stuck on international on funding our defense budget. We never get to the discussion. When we had the Build Back Better plan, did have a bunch of child. I mean, I don't particularly favor child tax credits, child daycare tax credits. I favor the actual service of child daycare. But we didn't even get around to knowing that that was in the bill until a sort of an asterisk conversation 2 weeks before it was going to be considered by the legislature. So, yeah, we don't even discuss it.
You know, and I think part of this, Sandy, is when your children are grown, right? When your children are grown, and your grandchildren may even be grown, you don't see this as an issue because it's not, something that you see. You don't see this as an issue, as a problem, because you don't see it.
Well, it's not in my life.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, because the circumstances of my children are lucky enough so that they aren't facing the consequences of not having daycare available. But I did have children who had au pairs, who actually were going to the great expense of having daycare in their homes. That's something that very few people can afford in today's world. And we ought to understand that while they can't afford it, there are very, very, very many people, very many families in this country that need daycare service. And if you have in-house daycare service, that can be $25,000 to $30,000 a year if you have multiple children. So we should understand that daycare is not cheap, and that institutional daycare is a service that would greatly change the budget of and the welfare of our middle class families.
So look, listen, we got to get out of here. Thank you, Sandy, as always, for a robust conversation. And thank everybody who made the show go. Especially thank you, Cassandra, for chiming in. Hope everybody is going to be enjoying the warm weather over the next several days. And I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.